And we're back. Ernie Yarbrough standing in for Phil Williams at Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We've been covering in the top of our Triple Dipper about making America and making Alabama local again. Had my cousin on here for a little bit, talk about what it was like knocking doors and jumping in, kind of dismantling the fear of how you get started and getting the machine rolling, and the importance of just jumping off first and foremost, being committed to principle, right? So you got to start. We started this whole thing by, this journey of getting elected takes me as really a political nobody, I got to know my roots. I got to start somewhere, right? I got to have my roots deep down into the, as it were, the ground, the earth of what is right and good and true, and grow up from there, right? And so, but as the tree grows, you become visible, right? You put your name out there, knocking the doors. God blessed our efforts. We ended up winning the primary, which is the big battle in most places, Republican primary in Alabama. And it became evident that, you know, we were developing a new model, not only were we just being principled about how we were running and the issues we were running on, you know, the traditional but truly heartfelt conservative issues of really pro-life, really lower taxes, really limited government, really grassroots, you know, giving the voice and the initiative and the authority and the responsibility back to the people, but also developing a new model for the favor that we curry, right? Whose favor are we after, right? We saw that first right in our face in the campaign because, hey, we raised $50,000 to $60,000 from grassroots people, and the opponent had $300,000 from Montgomery. So that was certainly an in-your-face reminder, hey, we're up against some hard things, but let's just keep plowing ahead in our principles and knocking doors and loving on people, right? Because it did take a village. As we said, hey, you got to plagiarize Hillary Clinton, take her out of context, but it took a village of people, covenant community locally doing the right thing, right? But now, as I begin to get past the primary and we figured, hey, we're going to win the general probably because that's where the battle is the primary. Now we got a new opportunity, right? We got a new stage because now we got to move past the getting elected part, and now that was successful, and certainly hold to our principles. But as we move into winning the general and getting elected, how do we move into serving, right? Because it seems like, you know, sometimes people have, on the one hand, nobody in Alabama wants a hard liberal, you know, crazy woke person for the most part elected, but neither do they really want a person who knows all their conservative principles, but they're not involved. Right, they're not helping. They're not serving. They're not pouring out. They're like what a person who can walk out those principles, right? And so, this was the next step moving into the Triple Dipper coming up next. Men and women in the arena, right? Part two of the Triple Dipper, seeing men and women in the arena who know, hey, it's not enough to be principled. Those are important, but what does it take to walk it out, right? What does it take to now move into falling in love with our communities and showing that tremendous love and those principles in action, right? Adorning it all with a life of service, committed love, principle walking out by love, right? As the Lord said, hey, love is the fulfillment of the law. It's an action tied to a standard. So coming up, in the next hour, we're going to hear from some great people who are examples of that. Tim Yarbrough, yes, he has the same last name as me. He is my dad, on the ministries he has for caring for those for abused women and children. And Hannah Stevens, hearing about how she got rolling into volunteering at the fire department and the EMT and her service and how she's helped save lives and how we can all help plug in and support our volunteer fire departments and our first responders. So number two of the Triple Dipper coming back up. That's a wrap for the Right Side.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Spanning south of Birmingham to north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa to Gadsden, with parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in for a good measure. This is Right Side Radio. Coming in at the top of the second hour here for the second of our Triple Dipper. Obviously, this is not Phil Williams. This is State Rep. Ernie Yarbrough filling in. Honored to be here to cover for him as he is holding down the fort in the workplace for a little while. And so, Triple Dipper today, we've had Make America Local again. We've had coming in now to this second part. Hey, it's not enough to just have principal and even get elected, which is great, but you got to be men and women in the arena. And there's some tremendous examples out there who have, of men and women in the arena. I think the famous quote by Teddy Roosevelt, who are not just principal, but they're walking out love and life and giving of themselves in incredible ways to show principle in action, for that's what this country needs. And I have a special guest on at the top of this second hour, a man who I love dearly, and in fact, without whom I would not be here. It is actually my father, Tim Yarbrough, on to share with us some tremendous ways that he is serving and that God has opened up doors for him to help the distressed, the poor, the needy, the outcast, those taken advantage of. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Dad, a.k.a. Tim Yarbrough.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it is my pleasure, Dad, and so glad that you could hop on here for a little bit. Dad, we've been talking about in the first segment of the Triple Dipper about making America local again and principle and getting back to grassroots. Now moving into this next section where we talk about the men and women in the arena, right? Getting dirty, our hands dirty, as it were, in the real situations of life. And I thought it would be awesome to have you on to take a few minutes to share, you know, just like Crystal and I were just talking in the last hour about, you know, it's overwhelming at first, but you jump in, you start knocking doors, you do your thing, you're trying to just get into some way to make a difference, and then more doors open and things happen, right? And you saw some needs, God put some needs in your path that you had an opportunity to help with abused women and children and other folks who are taken advantage of, and you wanted to be help be a defense and a way to empower them to have a new path and a new way in life. And so I just wanted to have you on and just share the story about how that came to be and how you are ministering as a man in the arena, taking responsibility in your community and jumping in to make a difference.
Okay, well, you know, a little background is probably helpful. As you know, son, I've been a serial entrepreneur pretty well most of my life, and that's the circles that I've traveled in. And I have been a Christian since the age of 17 when the Lord converted me. And during, you know, this journey, I've been married to your mom now for 46 years. And in the course of this journey in our faith, one of the things that happened in God's providence is we started to work and help people with adoptions. And not only with adoptions, we took on some work with orphanages in distressed countries. And through that process of working with adoptions and working in the arena of these types of needs, we began to recognize a pattern that was taking place inside the Protestant church world. And that pattern of behavior was women inside religious circles and their children who were being abused. And it is a dominant issue with males, in particular, who use religion as a mechanism for control, for doing horrible things inside their home. And so we began at that time to feel a great burden from the Lord. This is not a problem that can be solved by government. It's not a problem that can be solved by others. It's a problem that is spiritual in its nature, at its very foundation. It has to do with the nature of man and what we believe to be the nature of marriage and the nature of the family and the nature of homes. And so from that, we began, by the grace of God, to train, to get training, to read. I'm a reader, mm-hmm. and so I have a fairly extensive library on this subject. And so we begin to reach out to help women who and their children who were abused from inside the Protestant, primarily the Protestant church world. Mm-hmm. Statistics tell us that inside of any particular congregation, that 25% or one out of four of the marriages in that congregation has abuse going on within the home. And it is a much bigger problem than we have given credence to, and we chose very specifically to work with the circles of abuse that happens within the religious realm or the religious circles, because God himself is brought alongside by the abuser to justify the way that he, an individual, talks to his wife, the way he treats his children, the way he operates his home, and it serves a tremendous amount of self-centeredness. Mm. And so that was how we began. And as we began, just because of where the Lord has put me in my life, having a male who stands up and speaks about this stuff or gets involved in it, it opened up a floodgate of people who wanted to, particularly women who wanted to talk with you, and at first they're kind of distrustful of the fact that a man sure. is willing to listen to sure. these kind of stories. And then I should point out that not all abuse in these relationships is the male, even though 95 out of 100, that's the way it's going to be. Abuse mm-hmm. is a male problem. Mm-hmm. And the other five is abusive females. And it lends itself to the nature of man. Hmm. So what we did, we asked the question, as an entrepreneur, there are certain things that you do. You want to know, how can I be the most effective? In what way can I serve this need or help bring about resolutions or potential resolutions that can be the most effective? Hmm. And so what we did from that is there's a recognition that you have to have. A lot of times in Christian charity, the need that you have is very short term. You raise money to help with Christmas, or there is a need for at an orphanage, or there is some specific short term involvement, and it typically involves the giving of money. Sometimes time, but in this particular instance where you deal with women who have gone through years of verbal, emotional, spiritual, financial abuse, there is no such thing as a short-term commitment. Mm. If you get involved in something like this, you're talking about being involved in people's lives that have been traumatized. Mm. And it goes on. It's a commitment that you make that is for years. It means every day that you wake up and they're in your community, then what you have is responsibilities, and the responsibilities of burdens to try to help walk with people who, for these reasons, have lost their way. They've lost their agency, their capacity to function. Mm-hmm. And so... The Lord gathered with us. What we did is we implemented a program, because the number one reason that women do not leave abusive relationships, a lot of it has to do with the financial aspects of where they are in life. Number two, there is oftentimes a teaching that abuse is something that a woman should tolerate and submit herself to. Mm. And that teaching is dominant. It is highly dominant within certain circles of the, not just the Protestant faith, but you find it in Catholicism, Mormonism, these different religious circles. And so there are places, for instance, where you can have dormitory type housing, safe places, or you can have domestic violence shelters where that occurs. And we recognized from the get-go that these were not ideal situations. So there's a whole group of entrepreneurs that shared this vision. God laid it on our hearts at the same time. And so what happened was is that we privately fund this work. And the way what we do is we buy homes, and there are certain things that we do with them, and we create these places where women and children can go. And they begin to create an environment for themselves that's free of abuse. Mm. And then we start walking with them through counseling, through reading the scriptures, through discussions, through getting to know them, to help them to begin to unravel what has happened to them. Mm. And it takes time. It takes great commitment. And so it was during the course of this particular part of our work that you also learn about how this has affected children. And you learn to deal with their anger issues in a different way, or how they strike out, or how that they operate within the home, what their protective mechanisms are.
Sure.
And so you get this whole education that God gives you as it relates to what happens when the faith itself is used as a vehicle of destruction rather than a vehicle of joy and rejoicing and life.
Mm. Well, then what's powerful on the other side there, like you said, there wasn't a government solution. The entrepreneur stepped in and provided what a government solution never could, and it allows you to address things on a spiritual and practical level that government solutions usually basically always fail to do.
Well, yes, when you're dealing with issues like this, when you deal with issues that are like trauma, issues of betrayal, issues of verbal abuse, one of my favorite passages of Scripture has become Proverbs 18:21 and Proverbs 15:4, where the Lord himself tells us that death and life is in the power of the tongue, and they that love it will eat the fruit thereof. And in 15:4, the scripture says, a wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach of the spirit. In all these years, of all the cases that we have been involved in, we've never been involved in a case that did not involve verbal abuse or the abuse of the sixth commandment. The sixth commandment says, thou shalt not murder. And the Word of God tells us death and life are in the power of the tongue. Now, not only was this good for the work that we do, but I found it instructive for my own life. And there have been times going through this and working with others where the Lord himself has reproved and corrected me and brought changes to my behavior as it relates to my own marriage and to my own children and grandchildren. Because he uses the circumstances of others to reflect back on you, your own behavior.
That's right. Well, Dad, that's very powerful. And certainly we found that to be the case in Knocking Doors. We were changed as much or more than others were changed. Running out of time here on this segment. But, Dad, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. Love to maybe get some time in the future, let you get back on and share some more if I can convince Phil to do that. But certainly, you see there, no government solution is as powerful as entrepreneurs taking the solution in hand and walking out the spiritual and practical needs so that the people together can meet the needs of other people in a whole life way. And that is the Right Side Way. We're back. Ernie Yarbrough filling in for Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, on this what's becoming a more and more beautiful Tuesday afternoon. In the second of our triple dipper here on the men and women in the arena, had my dad on in the last segment talking about just really cool, you know, that entrepreneurs, they saw a need, the abuse of women and children, and the need to get them to a safe place, the need to get them where they could actually get financial footing, be in a safe place and get to work, making money and getting on their own two feet, and just establishing their dignity and their personhood. And how cool is that, that they got involved? The man in the arena, my dad, we got a lady coming up in the arena, a woman in the arena in the next segment after the break, but that there was, they just saw a need. Like, they didn't have to wait for a government-provided solution, which usually costs way more, always costs way more, and that's always less effective than when local people see a need and jump in there in the arena of life, right, on those good principles and get their hands dirty, loving on people and helping people. And this is how actually they used to do it in America, believe it or not. They actually used to have a plethora of voluntary institutions. How did people solve problems? Would you believe they volunteered and they got together and they solved problems? They created voluntary groups, the histories of Salvation Armies of the world and those things of that ilk. They got together, saw a need, and said, hey, we're going to get together and use our life, our resources, our love, and our community, and we're going to take ownership and help fix this problem. What a remarkable idea.
So when's your dad running for office?
Well, I don't know. He is. It would be amazing. He's in his middle 60s, so I don't know if he's got that quite on his radar. But maybe this is one of those moments where they say that parents normally shouldn't live their dreams to their kids. But
or perhaps he can just have a bigger impact on his own and not deal with the bureaucracy of government.
Not lower himself to where I'm at and just keep on rocking on the big picture, inspiring people to do what he's doing, which would be amazing. You know, it's kind of like, you know, ultimately, you know, helping those you're taking advantage of, helping the down and out, giving the hand up, not the hand out. Right. And all those other social needs. Ultimately, you know, we complain a lot about government. Right. Oh, the government's this and that and higher taxes. But really, we find out that we need to look in the mirror and say, hey, we've given away all this responsibility to meet these needs. But when you give away the responsibility, you give away the authority. Right. Got to take it back. Got to take the responsibility back. Self-government, that sphere. Right. Got to flip the pyramid upside down. And then guess what? Authority flows to those who serve. Right. So when we take that responsibility back, that authority will flow to us. And you know what? When we do that, the amazing thing is our solutions will be better. They'll cost less and they will change people's lives in ways that government solutions never can and never will. And maybe, just maybe, we will fall in love with what it means to love God and to love our neighbors as ourselves, to help each other, right? To set the model of representative government through jumping into the arena, that man and woman in the arena, in the battle of life, in the privilege of freedom, standing in the gap for those who cannot stand for themselves. This is Ernie Yarbrough on Right Side Radio, filling in for Phil Williams. We'll be right back. Spanning south of Birmingham to north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa to Gadsden, with parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in for good measure. This is Right Side Radio. Again, Ernie Yarbrough, State Representative, District 7, filling in for the amazing Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. We're in the middle of our triple dipper, and we've considered making Alabama local again, and now we're in this second of the triple dipper of the men and women in the arena. So it's not enough just to know the principles of localism and grassroots freedom, but you got to jump in, you got to serve with love, you got to get your hands dirty. You got to get out there and meet the needs and put feet to the principles so that you can love and serve people and show them what freedom looks like. And so in order to do that, we had my dad on last segment talking about how he's helping serve women and children abused and in need of homes and shelter and jobs and work, entrepreneurs banding together to do the right thing and to help those in need and give them a hand up, not a hand out, so that they can go and then help others and do the same. And in this next segment, I've got an amazing young lady, Hannah Stevens, who is my friend, a friend of our family, who is just a helper in all things wonderful for our home, and also very involved in her work as a first responder, an EMT, and a volunteer firefighter. And it's got a little bit of background, speaking of football season in Alabama football, and her own athletic journey. So Hannah Stevens, this is kind of funny because you were also extraordinarily good at radio, and here you are, and I'm interviewing you. So thank you for gracing me with your presence on Right Side Radio today.
Well, thank you for having me. It is quite a different position to be in, but I'm very honored and excited to be here today because, like you said, normally I'd be interviewing you, but it's vice versa, so I'm excited.
That's right. Yes. So, hey, this is just, it's funny, but hey, you know what? God stoops to those of low estate and gives me a microphone to interview you. So here we are. And I know you'd say roll tide. So maybe take a moment to just introduce yourself and your background with the University of Alabama and how you got into sports and the passion and love for people. And then maybe tell us how that rolled into what your work is now with volunteer fire department, EMT, first responder, the needs that you're meeting and how other people can help as well.
Sure. So I guess long story short, you know, Cliff Note version, because who likes to read the book in the entirety these days? But long story short, I went to University of Alabama. I graduated in 2014. And over the course of a couple of years after college, landed a job at ESPN Radio in Huntsville, where I had a radio show and also co-hosted a morning drive radio show. And it was amazing. I loved it. I loved getting to, you know, get to meet coaches and meet players and get to know them in ways that otherwise I wouldn't have. But, you know, the Lord's hand, I guess, looking back, has just been pretty cool to see how he has kind of tied all this together. So I was the UA sign girl in college, and I made a sign that said, "Saban, we'll stay for 6 years, if you stay forever." And Tracy Wolfson took a picture. I didn't think much about it. By the end of that game, that was a Tennessee game in 2013, my life was forever changed, and I ended up switching my degree from marine science to sports broadcasting. Obviously used that degree after college for a while, and then the Lord shut that door. And I think that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever gone through, but also the biggest blessing in disguise, because, you know, the Lord was able to use tools and opportunities I had being a sports broadcaster, and has now kind of segued me into another part of my life where I'm a first responder. And I owe some of that to you, actually, because, you know, part of helping you campaign was helping with the Fall Fire Fest as well. So, you know, we worked together with the Fall Fire Fest last year, not this past October, but the year before at Speak. And I had really no interest at all of being a first responder at that point. You know, I was kind of just figuring out my next step. And, you know, while I was a sports broadcaster, I felt emptiness that I questioned a lot. Like, it was fun getting to call games. It was fun getting to interview players. It was fun getting to, you know, analyze numbers and positions and all that. But I felt,
and in fact,
like
so
I wasn't
good at
doing
it, so good at that Paul Feinbaum said you were like the daughter he never had.
Yeah, so he's one of my mentors. It was good to see him at the Rose Bowl. But, you know,
sure.
I'm not, and I want to make this clear to any of your listeners, because I firmly believe that no matter what you do in life, whether you are a dentist or a stay-at-home mom or an entrepreneur, or you work at a gas station or a grocery store or a fast food restaurant, you have a purpose and you have value. But, you know, for me, I realized that something was missing. And I would pray all the time, like, if this is not what you want me to do, Lord, please close that door and show me what you want me to do. And he did, and it was the hardest door he's ever shut, but it allowed me to walk through doors I wouldn't have otherwise walked through. And so when he shut that door, I was like, okay, like, this is not what I'm called to do. What am I called to do? And it took years. It wasn't like the next day I woke up and was like, oh, I'm going to be a firefighter and EMT one day. It became a process of walking through pain and, you know, confusion But the Lord's good. And I, you know, I can look back and see his hand in all that. And so, you know, I also want to say that no matter what job you do or what job you have, you can learn from those jobs. You can take, you know, or I mean, your past, what you've done in your life, you've been able to use those jobs, and you've taken skill sets from those and applied them, you know, whether you're working with people and it's made you a people person, or you're really good with math and it, you're able to, you know, kind of create things in this community that people need because you have the skill set and the brains to do that. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at today is like, you know, I can look back and see how the Lord's kind of progressed me through that. But, you know, going back to the Fall Fire Fest, you had a vision for this community, and I was just me and Myra and Crystal and many others in this community kind of worked together during your campaign. And that was another thing that was a part of that. And we helped the volunteer fire department. And I was like, okay, I'll help with social media and marketing. And then that quickly transitioned to, okay, I love all of it. And so now that's kind of what I do. And that's my goal is to become a full-time firefighter.
And before we get to the story of maybe some of the journey of that and some of the calls you've answered, I'd be remiss. Nora, my daughter, said, Dad, please promise me you've got to get Hannah to tell the story of Liberty, the dog.
Yes.
So along this way, not only have you picked up some unforeseen skills or unforeseen career paths, but we got a little animal love to go with it.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is another thing you look back and you're like, God has a sense of humor, because I kid you not, the night before we rescued Liberty, your mother-in-law, Barbara Mooney, and Crystal Yarbrough, we were all sitting at a dinner table kind of, you know, figuring out campaign stuff for, you know, the primaries or whatever it was. And somehow they mentioned a dog. And I was like, I'm never going to have another dog. I had one for like 13 years. He passed away in college. I never want another dog. Like, I love my life the way it is. And literally the next day, it was me and Myra, your wife, obviously. Yes, out for your campaign with your kids. And I literally don't even know where we were. And we stumbled upon this house that was on the list, and you could tell it was kind of like vacant. Like, I'm like, well, you know, you never know when the community stopped. Knocked on the door, no one answered. And as soon as I got out of the door, the car door, this little puppy was all over me, and all of them were, you know, and they were covered with ticks and fleas, and all the animals just needed help. But for whatever reason, this little puppy would not let me go. And so we tried to, like, leave her there twice. And so I held on to the side of your Suburban, and we took off down the road thinking that maybe that dog would stay. And we stopped in the road to make sure, and lo and behold, this little dog, now named Liberty, had chased us a half mile down the road, and I just couldn't leave the dog. I couldn't. We talked to the neighbor. They were like, oh, it's a blessing. I ended up talking to, you know, a relative of that home. And so we were given permission to keep Liberty, and that was a blessing in disguise, because it's kind of like, you know, our lives, you know, like we, whether it's in a church community or, I mean, we all are looking for a place to belong. And now Liberty has a home at my house, at your house, and my parents' house. So
that's right. Well, and maybe unbeknownst to you, that was your first starry path of being a first responder.
saving those in need.
Saving those in need, because Liberty, she looked rough, bones sticking out, not eating much. And like you said, the ticks and the fleas, but you took her in and loved her, and she, now everybody loves her. To know Liberty is obviously, she didn't have a name tag on named Liberty, but you came up with that name because obviously you're knocking doors, wanting to you know, extend freedom and liberty through the political campaign. So it was a great name for her, and we love her. And so you know, hey, maybe that was your start, like I said, to being a first responder. But so as you what was your, you know, as you moved through the Fall Fire Festival and the campaign progressed and life goes on, what was kind of your first, you start noticing things of need, and what was kind of the first, I guess, impression in your heart that, hey, maybe there's a tremendous need here in the volunteer fire department and the EMT and first responder world, and I think God may be calling me to this?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think when people hear the word volunteer firefighter, I mean, and I think most people, when you hear the word firefighter in general, regardless if you're volunteer or full-time, because, you know, statistically, I think it's over 60 or 70% of firefighters in our country are volunteers. That's kind of how it is. And so, you know, when you hear the word firefighter, most people think, oh, they, you know, they just stop fires, right? They save cats and trees and they knock down fires. But in reality, it's so much more than that. And that was kind of my first wake-up call, I guess, or eye-opening experience when I joined. The first calls were referral calls or lift assist, or, you know, someone's having a medical emergency. And, you know, when you go And the thing about being a first responder, Ernie, and it's kind of like when you're campaigning, you meet people at all stages in life. You meet people that are old and young. You meet people that are sick and healthy. And I think for being a first responder, when they call 911, they're having more than likely the worst day of their life. Mm. And you have the opportunity to meet them in their most vulnerable state and get to minister to them. And I think for me, it's been a blessing because it's the most fulfilled I've ever felt going to these calls. Knowing that this is the gospel in a job, right? Like, we get to meet people, we get to love them where they are, and it's more than that. So I know we've had conversations and just kind of figuring out what this looks like because, you know, when you go, you know, there are some people you go to calls and you're like, okay, you know, I just picked them off their bed, that's fine. But then you meet people in the community, Ernie, that are just needy, not necessarily for physical things, but just community.
Sure.
Just like you did campaigning, you realize these people just need conversation.
Yeah, I know you had a call where it was like an ex-vet. And he was, you know, struggling with purpose in life, you know, and hopefully, God forbid, to even taking his own life. And he wanted somebody to talk to and just share and unburden. I mean, you've been on calls from that to you've shared, like, you know, blood and people dying and, like, I mean, stuff from, like, kind of, if you can say low-key to, I mean, high-end and everything in between. And, I mean, and yet, you know, God has, you know, you've embraced that and you've walked out being, you know, the solution, in some sense, God's hands and feet to these people, and that we didn't even know. Like I said, you know, when I campaigned, I didn't realize how much the volunteer fire department did, and I know you know more than I do about that now for sure. And like, wow, there were these needs, aka opportunities, right under our own nose, and we didn't even realize it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality for most people, Ernie. And, you know, when we meet people and I go on calls or we do these things like the Fall Fire Fest, like, I think it's just a lack of education, not on the community's part, but just in general. Like, people don't know that volunteer firefighters and fire stations rely on donations and fundraisers, but also that, you know, we're people with full-time jobs that have families and lives outside of this. And, you know, we're not getting paid to do this. I mean, when you wake, you get woken up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning with medical call or a house fire. I mean, we're just getting up out of our pajamas and getting dressed and going to a call. I mean, we're not getting paid to do it. We're just doing it because we love our community.
It's like food. It's like for us, by us is really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, 100%. Hannah, don't go anywhere. We're going to get you back here to finish up getting us to the top of the hour. But here we are in this second part of our Triple Dipper, Men and Women in the Arena. Hannah Stevens, volunteer firefighter, EMT, first responder, laying on the line, serving, rescuing animals and rescuing people. Because, hey, that's what the right side and the right way is. We'll catch you back in a few minutes. Back, Ernie Yarbrough filling in for Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. We've added another live guest into the studio here, a man by the name of, you probably heard of him, Phil Williams. So we're glad he could join us today for his radio show. But hey, you know what? You can't keep a working man from working.
Hey, give me a mic there, but I'm going to use your mic real quick. I'm just proud that I've got friends like y'all that will fill in when I got a conflict in my schedule. But you guys have been doing amazing stuff.
Oh well, listen, we listened to your show enough. We're not like one guy said, hey, don't deviate from the outline. I said I wasn't planning on it. So outlines and structure help get. Saban even says, right? Saban says structure and process bring success.
Well, just so you know, I did not come back in and take over my seat. I just dragged another chair in the studio and I'm hanging
That's
out
right.
now.
And so I am truly honored. We've got Hannah Stevens on still here. Hannah, you still there?
I am, yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, rumor has it we're going to get to football here in a second because We have a gentleman who's texting in about the natty last night. But before we get to that, we wanted to wrap up a little bit of the conversation here about the fact that, you know, God's calling your life now from being a Division I athlete for Alabama and on the rowing team to the UA sign girl, ESPN radio broadcasting now. To obviously you do a lot of work with social media and online stuff, and as well as jumping into first responder, EMT, volunteer firefighter. And where we left off last time was, you know, we talked about the fact that just like the campaign opened up to us, there's all these needs right under our nose that we didn't even know existed. And this has kind of exploded in a great way. And it was like, wow, this is what it's like to make Alabama local again. It's like there's all these needs we didn't even see, didn't know was there. And here we are, and you're jumping in and serving. So you saw the opportunity not just to be a volunteer firefighter, but you also went the next level and just worked your tail off to actually go to school and get your EMT. So I know that was hard. The class was down to like two people, dropping like flies.
Yeah.
And so you worked hard and you nailed it. You did it. And now you're serving, answering calls left and right. You show up at our house and we'll be like, hey, did you get any calls? And you're like, yeah. You know, it could be anything from emotional distress to stub toe to life and death. And so before we get to the natty question, because that's going to be important here, we got to leave some time for that. Tell people how they can become aware of what their fire department is, their needs, and how they can help get plugged in and involved to support their local volunteer fire department and first responders.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's important for people to know that this is a community affair, right? Like, this is a situation where we all join together for a common goal of keeping our community healthy and, you know, alive, so to speak. And so I think it's important for people to know that you can serve. There's so many opportunities, whether it's just financial donation or maybe you want to become a volunteer firefighter, or you're like, you know what, I just want to show up once a month and help mop the floors, or I just want to help fundraise. Like, there are so many ways that you can get involved that everyone's needed. I mean, regardless of your age or, you know, your background, like, you are important, you are wanted, and you are needed. And I think it's just the willingness to help that means the most, because I'm telling you, if you go to your volunteer fire station right now and say, hey, how can I help? They're going to find a way for you to get involved and help your community just like I did.
That's right. We even did a collection of volunteer fire dues, has generated tens of thousands of dollars for one volunteer fire department, and you've helped spearhead that in a really important way. And that kind of money for a local volunteer fire department is transformational. So like you said, ask a question, jump in, get involved. Speaking of which, we have a question right here live, I think.
Yeah, I would be remiss and probably lose points on my grade. A gentleman, John from Huntsville, always grades us. So clearly you're the most qualified. Thoughts on the big game last night with about 30 seconds left.
Yes. I mean, Michigan, obviously, we'll see what happens with them and their program. But 100%, they did a fantastic job. I think Washington didn't do as well defensively as I thought they were going to do, stopping the run for Michigan. But, I mean, you got to give them a round of applause for both teams going into season until the national championship game. I mean, that's far and few between. But, I mean, obviously, as an Alabama fan, I'd have loved to see us make it. But, hey, like I say, at the end of the day, Alabama played their worst game of the season and took the now national champ with an asterisk at the end to overtime. So, and lost. But, hey, listen, that has to count for something. But the asterisk is very important, and I think – months down the road, we'll find out why.
And as an Auburn fan, I'm going to quote Deion Sanders and just say, we coming. Eventually. Well, very good. Hannah, thank you so much for jumping on, sharing your heart, your passion, the ways that you serve, and how to spot opportunities. Jump in there. Just, hey, show up. Literally, just show up and say, I'm burdened to help. What can I do? That's the best way to just jump in there, if nothing else, because, hey, that's what we did, and now you just helped spearhead tens of thousands of dollars for a local volunteer fire department by letting the rest of the community know, hey, you can help too. So we will come back and start the Triple Dipper, the third part of that, here shortly, but men and women in the arena getting it done, Triple Dipper, and that's the right way and the right side. We'll be right back.
right side ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right.